Matt, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Aha.
All right, you're on the non-air internet air of Kill Radio.
Can you hear us okay?
I'm happy to be here.
All right, now you're speaking to us live from the Clothing of the American Mind. Is this correct?
This is correct. This is
Rapid Response?
The headquarters for the Los Angeles Rapid Response Team. We've been responding to voter disenfranchisement, voter problems all day, basically. The main issue, which is interesting, this is the first year nationwide that they've launched this, but it's the PBR, the poll ballot reader. It's a new piece of equipment that all these polling places have had, and I'd have to say that's probably 80% of the calls, definitely.
Are you talking about the paper inked ballots?
Well, this is the situation. The Inca Vote is a paper ballot. It's kind of like a Scantron.
Right.
And you just basically put the ink on there. And what normally would happen is that you would, up until this year, is you would just drop it into the ballot box. And then those would go to a general tabulator here in Los Angeles County, is in Norwalk. But this year, the first year that they're doing this, is they have these things called PBRs. It's a precinct ballot reader or recorder, I think. I'm not sure the R there. But it's a machine that this year, all it was doing was verifying that the vote that was cast on the ballot was not an overvote, meaning that you didn't vote twice for Secretary of State, like you didn't choose two people, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's an overvote. In California, there's no such thing as an undervote, because you can't undervote in California. You can only, if you walk in there and just pick one candidate and walk out. But it was basically detecting overvotes. The problem is that the machines were reading them and calling these cards overvotes when they weren't truly overvotes. There were machines that weren't even working. There were machines that were spitting these things out for no apparent reason besides, calling them overvotes. And the problem is that a majority of the poll workers have no idea what they're doing in regard to these machines, because, again, they are so new. So some people were just basically turning them off, plugging them, and plugging them back in. In some cases, people were just putting the ballots underneath this machine, not putting them in the ballot box and just letting them sit there until someone came to decide what they were going to do with these ballots before they put them in the box, which is insane. You know, basically, ballots that were voted on were just sitting out in the precinct, basically in the polling place, neither put in the ballot box at all. So that was one of the major issues that has come up today, is that PBR machine.
Well, I want to ask you, because I had an experience with that in my polling place, and I didn't even know what it was. Like, I thought that machine was the thing that could do the counting. You're saying all the thing is supposed to do is find out if you overvoted, and if so, you get a chance to redo it right then and there, because they'll say, oh, look, there's a problem with your ballot?
Exactly. What would happen is, the thing is that this was the first year that they rolled it out. In 2008, they're supposed to use these machines again, but in 2008, the machine is going to have a secondary function, and that is going to be actually counting the vote.
Okay. Well, the machine in my place was broken. So it's like the first day it was going to be used, and it wasn't working. They were just throwing the ballots into the little slot at the bottom. So they weren't – from what you're saying, that means it could be that some of those are overvoted. But, you don't get to find out if it is a problem or – whatever, to redo it. It's just like that option isn't there.
Exactly. So that's the situation. The technology is so new to a lot of these people, and I mean, people that work in polls have worked them for years, can do it year after year. So a lot of times people thought that didn't take them seriously, these machines. They just thought they were just going to be plug in and they would be ready to go, but as we're finding out all day today, that's not the case. So many of these machines are just not working right. And what's scary is, again, in the plan is in 08 for these machines to actually count the votes. So hopefully by this action that we're doing here and all the actions across the country, if we can reveal that these machines weren't even able to do the simple, decide whether a ballot was an overvote,
yeah.
for that now to be rolled out to actually counting the votes, that's insane. That just can't happen. We can't be so dependent on technology that, we lose our democracy, I guess, you know.
So are you saying that there's no system in place to train pollsters how to use these machines? They're sort of given to them with the hope that they would figure it out?
Well, that's a funny story in itself, because these machines actually, before they are brought to the polling place, they're actually sitting in the inspector's house for sometimes up to 2 weeks before the election.
Wow.
Now, the inspector is basically the person at the poll that's in charge, and they're basically the head poll worker. And so they have the machine in their house for 2 weeks. That person tends to have more knowledge than the other poll workers. Now, poll worker training is required to become a poll worker, but poll training is something that you can do by listening to an online recording. So, I mean, the fact that someone did training is just, you know, up to them.
It's like traffic school.
Yeah, like
exactly. It's like assuming the person's going to be a better driver by continually clicking until they get the right answer.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, something that we were discussing and that we really never got an answer for is that, you know, does a poll location, does the Secretary of State have a responsibility to require them, you know, to be trained? And secondly, another thing we were running into is with your poll location, you go there, and there's one inspector and maybe one other poll worker. And there's like, you know, eight, 12, 15 different voting machines where you're like the Inca vote. So, you know, there's a possibility that, you know, not having enough people at the polls can add to the confusion as well, because you don't have enough poll workers for how many voters. And that's something we were discussing, like, why isn't it required that a polling place have a certain number of poll workers, and when they don't, why, you know, who's responsible for that? Why is that happening? And that's something we haven't got an answer on yet, but it's a question that I would really like to know.
Do you know if, I mean, I'm still comforted by the fact that it is a piece of paper with ink on it and it's not a touchscreen or whatever. What is the trend, I mean, right now as far as paper ballots versus the touchscreen thing? I mean, for California or just for the country? I mean, I'm hearing that both Republicans and Democrats are getting fed up with the whole electronic voting thing.
Well, the situation is that there is no federal law in regard
right.
to voting. Voting is a state is determined by the state, and the Secretary of State specifically is the one that would determine exactly what the rules are and exactly what the laws are. I mean, the federal government has passed the HAVA Act, the Help America's Vote Act, but in reality, it is up to the states to implement those rules and to actually make the laws. Now, if we were, specifically here in California, if we were able to get someone like Deborah Bowen, who is running against McPherson here, she is someone that is completely against these computer machines, and she understands that any type of machine that doesn't have an open source code is going to be a problem. And she's gone past that point and said, we don't need machines, you know. And if you get a Secretary of State like that, you're going to have change in a state like California. Now, again, that's a state-by-state issue. So, I mean, the trend, I think, after this election, because Republicans and Democrats both are being affected by this, I think there is going to be change nationally. I mean, I can't say that for 100%, but I can tell you that with Republicans having problems, I've noticed that it isn't just in, you know, low-income minority areas where, that is happening. It's also happening in Republican districts, and that's kind of new for these machines. So I think that happening is going to really make the change, hopefully make the federal government act and really make it so that we don't have these, you know, we don't have a democracy that can be hacked, you know?
Yeah. How do you think this is affecting the way people vote? I mean, it seems like you go into a polling place and the general air, the environment, is this sort of idea that, you know, your vote may or may not count. So, I mean, do you think that these problems, that like the ones that you're describing, are, besides the fact that they're affecting the politicians, they're also affecting the voters and the sort of the confidence with which they go in to vote for a candidate?
Yeah. The one issue that is probably loud and clear with this election is that, or I guess this is probably one of the first elections that the voting in the elections is an issue in the election. So I think the one thing that I've been hearing is there is a lot of people that get the feeling that since their vote's not counting, that they, you know, they're sick of it, they should just, you know, why even vote? You know, that's an attitude that some people have. But first of all, I mean, I think that that is, you know, a little bit defeatist, or it is defeatist, you know, to begin with. But if you don't vote, there's no way your vote's going to count. So,
that's true.
You got to at least try to vote. And if it doesn't count, that's something that, you know, needs to change. But by not voting is not going to help or change the outcome of the election.
Right, but then maybe you go in to vote, but you don't put a lot of effort into it. You don't really research the candidates or research the propositions. You just kind of go in out of this, you know, sense of duty, oh, I have to vote, but you don't really feel like you're a part of the process. And if your vote doesn't count, there's no way you're ever going to know about it. And even if you do find out about it, it doesn't sound like there's anything you can do about it, in, at least not in the short term, except to go vote again, you know, on some ballot measure that will protect voting in the future. Do you think people feel a little trapped, like they're supposed to vote, but that they don't feel like they're a part of the system?
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, that's definitely something that you know, is probably, especially, you know, as the day's unfolding and everyone's reporting on all these problems on the polls, and I sympathize with that, you know, with that view. I think most importantly, like I said, these Secretary of State positions are so important, and if you vote for anything on the ballot, it's the Secretary of State that needs a change, and that position is becoming more powerful than any position, any, you know, in any level of government now. I saw, you know, even in 2000. Where Katherine Harris was the, you know, Secretary of State in Florida, she, you know, so happened to be also the Bush-Cheney reelection chair of Florida. And
yes.
Then, in 2004, you had Ken Blackwell, where he was actually the, Secretary of State, but again was also the chair of the Bush-Cheney Ohio campaign. Now, both of those people, I don't know for sure, I believe have lost, their election bids, and I guess that's a good sign, you know,
yes.
In those states that, you know, these people that were part of, you know, making us feel unsafe with our vote are not going to be in office anymore, and that's at least one positive way to, you know, look at it. But again, you know, I sympathize with what you're saying. You know, people, you know, probably feeling trapped that, you know, they, you know, I want to vote because it's important, but by voting, is it going to count, you know?
Hopefully we can continue to unelect the bad people that make electing such an unfortunate situation as it is right now.
Yeah. The Secretary of State race in California is probably by far the most important, because as it's kind of cliche, as California goes the nation, but I really think the situation here is so primed for change because of who Deborah Bowen is. Deborah Bowen was a state senator. She was someone that was on the forefront of a lot of election law reform, and she is also a computer scientist. She's someone that knows about this whole idea of why it's important to, if we even have these computer voting machines, why it's important to have the source code public and not these proprietary machines being run by corporations that are giving money to one of the political parties. And so I think with Deborah Bowen winning would be one big step forward. Well, and Catherine Harris lose is great, but I think having Deborah Bowen win would be a giant step compared to those two, you know, great defeat, you know, those defeats.
Hey, Matt, by the way, we're speaking to Matt at the Clothing for the American Mind Rapid Response Center for Los Angeles, right?
Yep.
And I was going to ask you if you heard anything about this. I was reading about this the other day, that the if, in fact, it does happen that there is a switch in the balance of power and the Democrats take a majority, that the Republican strategy will be tomorrow morning to say, hey, there was election fraud. Hey, there was problems and irregularities at the polling places. The Democrats stole the election.
Right.
Have you heard about this ploy, which is what they often do, is just accuse their opponents of doing what they are doing to their opponents?
that's a pretty good point. The one thing I can tell you that is, if that is the case, and we and corporate media, mainstream media, starts to pick up that course of action, we can put to bed the fact that we have a liberal bias in the media, because
yes.
We were saying that in 2000, we were saying that in 2004.
Yes,
and now in 2006, when the Republicans say it, it becomes a mainstream issue.
Right.
I mean, that would be the last thing, discuss where you know, race by race, situations where maybe there was some problems with voting or these voting irregularities, but it's a little bit of a convoluted statement for them to make, I think, just because of their history with Diebold and all these other things.
Yeah.
Which doesn't put it past them, of course. I mean, hypocrisy is not something that they shy away from.
No.
So I mean, I bet it's going to happen.
It's their specialty,
specifically in certain races where that type of stuff may have happened. I'm sure that's going to be their argument. But again, I think if the mainstream media were to pick that up and really carry it, the message that the Democrats won because of voting irregularities, that would just kill the whole liberal bias in the media angle.
No kidding.
It's just been too long that they've ignored this issue for them to all of a sudden jump on the bad way.
Right.
Well, we at Kill Radio do have a liberal bias, and we're not the media, so that automatically proves that the media doesn't have a liberal bias.
Hey, I'm looking at the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the DCCC site, and I've just been refreshing it as we've been talking, and now they're up to, they say, they have 10 Democratic pickups, and they say there's 5 to go to get the Democratic majority. So according to this site, which I don't know if all are solid, but I guess they're far enough along they feel confident reporting them, they say that there are 10 Democratic pickups with 5 to go.
Hey, that is great.
Yeah, and it shows GOP pickups as 0, so...
Yeah, and the best thing here, too, is there's a lot of different issues that are going to be able to be brought to the forefront if we do have a Democratic majority, at least in the House. You know, grabbing the Senate would be amazing, but long as we, get that the House back, there can be at least some oversight. We'll be able to do things that we've never been able to do before as a country or Congress, that is, would be able to do things that it hasn't had the will to do. They haven't, there hasn't been a single debate.
I was going to say, one of the things they'd be able to do is actually have a legitimate debate.
Yeah, exactly. And in even an issue that I personally am involved in, I've been working on this election protection stuff as a nonpartisan heart. There is also a partisan heart in me that is really active in the impeachment effort. And I think with a House that is Democratic, what that will make is John Conyers is a representative that will become the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, As the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, he would be the one who would oversee the hearings of impeachment. And he has already written a document that's called the Constitution in Crisis, where he outlines all the reasons why impeachment is necessary. So, you know, there could be a lot of different things. You know, people talk about things like minimum wage being increased, Medicare being able to buy drugs in bulk, you know, all these other, you know, great issue things that will change. But I think the main one that I am going to be working for come tomorrow is going to be this issue of impeachment, because if we win back the House, it's that much closer of being possible.
That has got to get pushed to the forefront. I mean, it's like no accountability. Six years go by, no accountability, nothing, no one cares, no one investigates, no one even asks the question. That has got to turn around. I mean, that's right. That's what I'm looking for, some accountability all the way up and down the line for so many problems.
Right.
Oh. All right. So any other big highlights of what you've been receiving at the Rapid Response Call Center?
Okay. Yeah, actually, I do have to go in here in a minute, but I want to give one anecdote that was pretty interesting. Give out the website, if you go to videothevote.org,
okay.
There's actually a lot of if you go to videothevote.org, there's actually a lot of video up already from across the country. Right now, there's actually only three YouTube links or three YouTube sections. I'm sorry, segments from California,
okay.
But there's some from all over the country, specifically New Jersey and Ohio. There are some in Colorado. They're all over the country, and if you just go on there, you'll be able to download. They have about four up there that they have picked to kind of the top ones, and then if you click more videos, you can basically just peruse through all the videos that have been uploaded all day.
All right, great. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, it's really great, and just so you know, just to give the mainstream media the ability to have this stuff, they've also set up an FTP server for the mainstream media, which is great. And I think you know, we may see this type of stuff coming into the mainstream media just because of this website. And I'm hoping that that's the case. That you know, like we said, you know, the Republicans may, you know, say that they lost the election because of you know, voting irregularities. And make it a big issue, but this website is going to be able to tell the truth nonpartisanly, or in a nonpartisan way, and I think that's going to be really an effective way for America to take back their democracy and take back their right to vote.
Document it.
Well, the mainstream media can only ignore so much before they start to lose sponsors, right?
Right, right, and places like this, like Kill Radio, are. These alternative media sources are starting to become more popular than the mainstream media among people that really take their rights seriously and take being an American seriously. So, you know, maybe we can do it without them. Maybe we need them. I don't know. I a group like, you know, Kill Radio is good enough for me, man. You guys are doing a great job, and I appreciate what you guys are doing as well.
Thank you so much for joining us and giving us your insight on what's going on today and what's going on in general. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, and you get back to the great work you're doing, and I'll give you the last little update. According to the DCCC, they're showing now two to go to get a majority. So
awesome.
Yeah, I just refreshed it. It went to 13. So I don't know how accurate this is, but according to that website, it's 13.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. And, yeah, I'm going to jump back on here and try to stop some more of this disenfranchisement.
Yeah, please do. Thank you so much for being there and doing what you're doing, and thank everybody.
All right. See you, guys.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That, by the way, was incredible, that whole discussion we were just having.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy actually there on the ground actually participating in democracy.
The Rapid Response Call Center at the Clothing of the American Mind store in Echo Park. It's on Sunset. Great place. Great merchandise, by the way. They have some of the greatest political T-shirts that you'll ever find. They're fun, clever, well designed, and just well made. Great stuff. But they really talk the talk. In addition, and they walk the walk.
Yeah,
right after
there's so
that.
Many places that come up with like clever little sound bites that they put on T-shirts, but they're not. politically minded at all. They don't care. They're just trying to sell T-shirts.
Right, right. But these people are right there in it, and they're taking calls from people and dispatching people to find out, you know, what's wrong and try to make it right and documenting it. That's the key here. So it's really, it's great.